it was pretty evident, wasn't it? We're coming up to 8 o'clock. We're going to look ahead to Arsenal against Manchester City, which is obviously the big match this afternoon, 4:30. We'll have live coverage, live commentary of, well, I mean, it's not title deciding yet, is it? But it's the biggest game of the season so far, so we'll get into that. But we're coming up to the news at 8 o'clock.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, it's Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton with you this morning on 5 Live Sunday Breakfast. And the headline, Sir Keir Starmer says it's his job to do something about leaks from his government. A number of Whitehall sources told the BBC earlier this week that his top adviser, Sue Gray, was paid more than him amid signs of disquiet in his top ranks. Prime Minister spoke ahead of Labour's first party conference in government in 15 years. John McTernan was Tony Blair's Director of Political Operations from 2005 to 2007.
In a sense, people are right to think things are difficult. The job this week of Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves and the rest of the cabinet is not to celebrate, but to say, this is what we're going to do for you. Yes, you have to be realistic with the public, saying things are going to get worse before they get better, but you have to be visionary and optimistic and say, and this is what better looks like.
The Israeli military says Hezbollah has fired a barrage of rockets from Lebanon. The Iranian-backed group says the attacks were an initial response to the wave of explosions of pagers and walkie-talkies that's widely believed to have been carried out by Israel. Our correspondent Paul Adams reports from Jerusalem.
Hezbollah is doing its best to demonstrate that it's still a formidable opponent. This morning, sirens sounded over large parts of northern Israel and more than 100 rockets were fired across the border. The army said some were intercepted, but there have been reports of Hezbollah rockets landing much further into Israel than before, close to the port city of Haifa and further east in the Galilee. Houses have been hit and people injured. Hezbollah said the targets included an Israeli defense technology company and an airbase. Last night, the authorities ordered schools in the north to close and restricted public gatherings in many areas.
Germany's far-right Alternative for Deutschland, or AfD party, could win a second regional election today in the state of Brandenburg, which surrounds Berlin. Opinion polls have shown it with a narrow lead over the centre-left Social Democratic Party of Chancellor Olaf Scholz, which has governed the state since German reunification in 1990.
The Princess Royal will join veterans and members of the armed forces at Oosterbeek War Cemetery in the Netherlands today. This is as commemorations continue to mark the 80th anniversary of one of the most famous battles of the Second World War. Operation Market Garden saw thousands of Allied troops parachute into Nazi-occupied land as part of a daring but ultimately failed offensive to end the conflict.
Some amazing pictures of that, actually, from that event yesterday in a lot of the newspapers and elsewhere this morning. Really incredible moment. James Gregg's got our sports news this morning, and it's interesting. Obviously, we're looking ahead to Manchester City against Arsenal. Pep Guardiola, have you seen this comment saying people expect to see Manchester City wiped off the face of the earth amid the ongoing hearing into the charges for the alleged breaches of rules? He says, I'm sorry, I want to defend my club, especially in these modern days when everyone expecting us not only to be relegated, to be disappeared off the face of the earth, the world. And he says, yeah, basically saying, during a season you can say, oh, that was a bad season, but for performances, some people say it was a disgrace, it's a disaster, it's unacceptable. No, during 90 minutes, it's one bad afternoon when they were better.
I mean, he's talking about it quite a lot, isn't he?
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, he is getting asked about it a lot, in
fairness.
That's
true. Yeah.
And, you know, the hearing takes place soon, or is underway. You know, it's expected to last a few weeks. We'll find out early next year what happens to them. So he's going to get asked about it. And I think he knows that. But I think what is the eventual outcome, nobody has a clue. Because, you know, people, I'm speaking to sports lawyers and, you know, people like Kieran Maguire, who's a friend of the programme. And nobody knows. Whereas City obviously think we're absolutely fine. And no matter who you speak to, you don't have an inkling. And that's very strange, you know, in football or in anything, you know, when it's, if it's a big court case or whatever, you know, you'll hear whispers, won't you? You know, we'll talk to people and they'll go, yeah, look, you know, they're banged to rights or whatever. And you get a bit of an inkling. With that, you've got no idea. And I think that's troubling him.
It's interesting because he was also asked about the Rodri stuff, wasn't he? Where Rodri was talking about, and there's a lot of discussion about that this morning in a lot of the papers and stuff as well, about, you know, saying too many games, player burnout, all of that, strike action could be an option. And I don't know, there's a piece on how integral he is to Manchester City's success, obviously.
Yes.
But at the same time, you wonder if that's something in a player's mind and he's talking publicly about it.
Yeah.
I wonder if that does affect your football in the end. Maybe not. I mean, he's a consummate professional, isn't he? He would just get on with it, I guess.
These guys, they have an amazing ability, no matter what's going on off the pitch,
to compartmentalise.
Yeah. Yeah,
leave it there.
Just go on, you know, it's the crossing the white line, you know, all the cliches. Yeah, but I think the cliches for a reason,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, no, for sure.
So
for
I think that once they get on the pitch, they're all right. They might be miserable after and feel really tired, but anyway, there you go. That was a brilliant fight, wasn't it? If you are just waking up last night and you missed the brilliant fight that we brought to you on 5 Live last night, Daniel Dubois is the man who has basically catapulted himself to global sporting stardom after dismantling Anthony Joshua in front of 96,000 fans at Wembley yesterday. 5 rounds, a big knockout. He knocked him down several times prior to that fight being stopped. 27 years old he is, so he's got plenty of years yet, right at the very pinnacle of heavyweight boxing. And he's British, and that was the biggest fight of his career. So where does he go from here? Well, good questions. We asked Steve Bunce last hour. We'll be doing some more reaction, of course, throughout the programme this morning. In the Premier League, Liverpool are top of the table at the moment after a 3-0 win over Brentford yesterday. Of course, in today's Premier League action, it is the champions at Manchester City at home to Arsenal in that late kickoff at 4:30. Before that, we should also say there is another match taking place today. It's Brighton playing against Nottingham Forest at the Amex. That's at 2, and both of them you can hear on 5 Live. England's cricketers lost by 68 runs to Australia in that second ODI at Headingley yesterday, so 2-0 up in the series now are the Aussies. There are 5 matches in that series. In F1, McLaren's Lando Norris beat his title rival Max Verstappen to pole for the Singapore Grand Prix. In qualifying yesterday, Lewis Hamilton is 3rd on the grid and Mercedes teammate George Russell is in 4th. And Rory McIlroy is 3 shots off the lead going into the final round of the PGA Championship at Wentworth. He's on 15 under alongside Billy Horschel. But Matteo Manassero, the Italian, is leading after shooting a 9 under 63 yesterday. You can watch highlights, by the way, later on BBC Two television. And the leaders get their final rounds underway around midday. More sports in a bit here on Sunday Breakfast.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good morning. Yes, Sunday Breakfast with Chris Warburton and Fliss Hannah. And today is the day that the Labour Party conference kicks off. The Deputy Prime Minister, Angela Rayner, is expected to announce measures to protect renters when she makes her keynote speech at the conference in Liverpool today. It is, of course, the party's first conference in government for more than a decade. But it comes after recent headlines over recent weeks' scrutiny over gifts, over freebies, cuts, of course, to the winter fuel allowance and the salary of a top aide.
Well, earlier on in the programme, we spoke to John McTernan, who was Tony Blair's Director of Political Operations from 2005 to 2007. And he's told us he's not surprised at the relatively downbeat mood.
I don't think anybody ever expected this to be like a celebration, because the circumstances Britain is in, with its, you know, lost decade and a half of economic growth, the low productivity, the pressures on the public sector, the public suffering from still the effects of the cost of living crisis. I don't think anybody in the country is celebrating, apart from the fact of getting rid of the Tory government. And in essence, this question is to get down to work, I think. The job this week of Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves and the rest of the cabinet is not to celebrate, but to say, this is what we're going to do for you. Yes, you have to be realistic with the public, saying things are going to get worse before they get better, but you have to be visionary and optimistic and say, and this is what better looks like. This is what better will be. This is what it's going to mean for you. And for so many people, if Labour deliver the 1.5 million houses we promised to deliver, then they'll say that's been a change. And we just have to tell the story all this week, and the red thread going through the whole conference has to be, this is how Labour are going to tackle the issue of inequality.
Well, our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman, is in Liverpool for us this morning. Henry, hello.
Good morning.
I mean, this is a funny one, isn't it? You'd expect any party going into their conference after election success to have a bit of a party atmosphere, a bit of an upbeat mood. But we've got these headaches. We were just kind of recapping there. We've got these, you know, the Keir Starmer having to be a bit on the back foot, say he'll no longer accept donations for clothing, trying to justify his football tickets. Has that dampened the mood?
Yeah, I think it has slightly. I mean, there's two things that go on at a party conference. Yeah, on one level, you have all the same people who gather in Westminster, cabinet ministers, junior ministers, MPs, advisors, officials, so on, all together just in a different place, Liverpool this week. And then you also have all the party activists, party members and so on. There's kind of two conferences existing at the same time. And definitely among the kind of officials, politicians and so on, the mood has been dampened, not just actually by the last week of stories, but also about the kind of gloomy government messaging, even though most people I speak to think that's necessary about the tough things to come. What I don't know, and we'll get a feel for over the next few weeks, is whether all of that has also dampened the mood among the party faithful, among the party grassroots. If it has, then I think that's really significant, and certainly the onus would be on Keir Starmer to find a way to lift their moods before the end of this conference on Wednesday.
Yeah, just in the last few days, we've had business leaders, so the CBI, the British Chambers of Commerce, saying that that kind of talking down the economy, that doom and that gloom, or that, you know, stating of the facts, Labour would say, is actually potentially stopping growth. It's making people feel kind of less confidence. Do you think that there is a problem where, because we've got to wait for the budget to see the announcements, to see some more of the policy, that perhaps people are just left in a bit of a vacuum looking at stuff like the winter fuel payment being cut and looking at, you know, talk of pain in the budget and feeling pretty negative?
Definitely. And that's a political challenge which a lot of people around Keir Starmer now acknowledge. You know, some of them think it had to be this way. Others of them wonder whether they could have got the sequencing a bit differently so that you didn't just have the winter fuel allowance cut and also the increase in pay for certain public sector workers sitting simultaneously alongside warnings that tough choices are going to come, which, you know, clearly are, as you said there, spooking some sort of people in the business community and some people just in the economy as they live their lives. I think there's a read across too to politically what the Labour Party, what the government has to do. And speaking to people around Keir Starmer, what they acknowledge their task is this week is not just to lay out the fact that there are going to have to be tough choices, as Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves have done repeatedly in their 2.5 months in power, but also to talk more about what they believe the benefits will be from making those tough choices, the dividends that the country will get. That's what the Labour Party, the government, is going to try to do this week, is chart out a sunnier future, even as they continue to insist that the short term is going to remain pretty bleak.
Yeah, but some important voices, you know, in the Labour fold talking, you know, quite anxiously about it. So last night, the General Secretary of Unite, Sharon Graham, said it's imperative the government do a U-turn on their winter fuel allowance policy. She said it's a misstep, it's a mistake, it's a cruel policy, and they need to do a U-turn.
Yeah, and that is not going to happen, to be clear. You know, Keir Starmer and Rachel Reeves have completely hitched their political wagon to that, and they believe that it is necessary not just to show that they're willing to make tough choices, but also because they say there is that £22 billion black hole to fill just this year, and this is a part of that. And Unite as a union is less influential over the Labour leadership, much less influential than it has been in previous leadership, certainly Jeremy Corbyn's leadership. But that's not to say that the Labour membership is in the same place as the Labour leadership. I don't think we really know on that, but it's likely that there will be a vote on the conference floor, because this conference isn't just a gathering, it is also the sort of sovereign decision-making body of the Labour Party. And there will be a vote, potentially, depending on what members decide to do, on the conference floor, on the winter fuel allowance policy. Unite are trying to push that. Could come tomorrow, Monday. And that could give us a very interesting gauge of where Labour Party members are on what is undoubtedly the most controversial decision this government has made so far.
Now, one of the stories just swirling around this week is the matter of Sue Gray's pay. Sue Gray, of course, his top civil advisor. What's really important here is this sort of the reports that this has been leaked, this has been briefed because of a power struggle, you know, at the very heart of government, these suggestions she's controlling access to the Prime Minister. And so a story gets leaked that she's paid more than the Prime Minister. What's the bigger story here? Is it the pay of a top civil servant, or is it that there's this disquiet in Downing Street?
Well, I mean, in some ways, they're the same story, because the pay itself, it's controversial, not necessarily because of the figure itself, though it is the first time in history any special advisor has been paid more than the Prime Minister, but because at the same time, various of her more junior colleagues feel like they have been forced into accepting pay cuts, not just below inflation pay rises, but actual pay cuts compared both to their Conservative predecessors and to what they were earning in opposition. That is contributing to a mood of real, I mean, not quite mutiny, but whatever is just sort of one half notch short of that in Downing Street. I mean, it's really hard for me to overstate how fractious the mood is there from people I speak to. And look, I've reported on Downing Streets before under successive prime ministers where people have fallen out. But I can't remember it ever happening 2.5 months into a government. I was speaking to one Conservative from the Boris Johnson years the other day. They said, it took us a year to get to this point with a Downing Street with Dominic Cummings in it. So, you know, I think it is causing distinct unease. And that unease is spreading, I think, across the government, because you speak to ministers and MPs who say, hang on, what on earth is going on in there in Downing Street?
OK, so they'll be hoping that this conference, the speeches, some of the set pieces, some of the policy will really move the news agenda on from this absolute headache. This is a really big deal for Labour, isn't it? This is the first time in, 15 years that its senior figures will be making speeches as government ministers, not as opposition politicians. They'll have the power, the responsibility, and I suppose this shows the scrutiny that goes along with that.
Exactly. And for all that we've just been talking about the challenges for the Labour Party and for the government, clearly the fact that for the first time in 15 years, 15 long years, as Labour activists would say it, the Labour politicians are speaking as government ministers as well as Labour politicians, that is going to convey a celebratory mood to the party and into the atmosphere of the whole event. It's a very big deal. Keir Starmer, you know, is the third politician since... third leader of the Labour Party since Gordon Brown lost the 2010 election to try to get Labour back into government, and the first who succeeded. That is a big deal. He will expect and will receive a rapturous reception, I'm sure, from Labour Party members when he comes to give his big speech on Tuesday because of that. But the challenges that we spoke about still, even if they're in that context, even if this is, you know, 4.5 or 5 years away from the next general election, they still are very present. And that is, you know... That is the challenge for Keir Starmer this week, is to maximise the optimism and minimise the gloom.
Henry, busy day for you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Henry Zeffman there, our chief political correspondent in Liverpool at the Labour Party conference, which begins today. It is 17 minutes past eight.
You've probably got a list of things your child needs for uni. Pans, cutlery, sheets, duvet, towels, you know. But this is a little reminder that they'll also need a TV licence to be covered to watch all the TV channels, live TV on streaming services and BBC iPlayer. On the downside, it's one more thing on your list. On the upside, you can continue to enjoy your favourite shows together on the family group chat. And they won't be bringing it home to be washed either. To find out more, search TV licence uni.
Have you spotted hot honey?
Hot honey?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
you familiar?
Sounds, I don't know, it sounds like it could be a beauty treatment. Could
you into it?
Good stuff.
You up for it?
I don't like, honey is the wrong kind of sweet. 85058 if you agree, but no, tell
not
me.
Not a honey fan.
It's just wrong.
Why?
It's the wrong kind of sweet.
What do you mean the wrong kind of sweet?
It's not sweet like sweets are sweet or
no,
fruit is sweet.
But it's a spectrum of sweet.
And honey is the wrong one. It's in the wrong.
It's like there's a spectrum of savoury.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? But it's not for you.
No.
So I mean, honey on toast, forget it.
Nah, no.
Not at all.
No, I don't even like I'll put it on honey on toast for my kids and then I'll lick my fingers and go, ah.
Honey on some porridge?
No, not at all. No honey.
No honey at all.
But tell me about hot honey, because clearly I want to know.
This might change everything. videos on TikTok with the hashtag hot honey have been viewed 912 million times. Yeah.
No, come on.
This is big. It's a new flavour in town, y'all. Hot honey. It is honey flavoured with, guess what? Chili. Yeah, okay.
Oh, right, okay, so the honey, so the honey is not
It's
heated.
Spicy. It's spicy. That's what it is. Over the past 4 weeks, Hilltop Honey, which is a honey company, has seen sales of its hot honey increase by 1,049%. I don't know if they... I mean, they may have just been selling one jar and then...
And now it's...
yeah, whatever that would be. Compared with the same period last year. But they've been selling it in the big supermarkets, right? Over the next few weeks, apparently, supermarkets will start to put Christmas food on the shelves. Of course they will.
They already have. I've already
bought mince
pies.
Are they, well, mince pies, I suppose. Kind of yeah, they get in straight after summer, basically, yeah. Don't they? So Asda's going to have pigs in blankets wreath. A pigs in blankets wreath with camembert and hot honey drizzle. At Tesco, Andouja and pork Wellington with hot honey drizzle. And Marks and Spencer's, who claim to have led on the innovation, hot honey brie brulee, hot honey popcorn. See, it's all going mad.
I'm starting to think you're in the pocket of big bees.
Big bees.
Big bees. Yeah. Massive bees.
Yeah.
Did you say 920 million views on TikTok?
912.
Is this really what we crawled out of the sea for? Like, this evolutionary peak of watching videos about spicy honey.
Blame a man called Mike Kurtz.
I will, Mike Kurtz.
Who's a New York chef. Most food experts pinpoint the start of this to him, who went on a trip to Brazil. I mean, you know, I don't know why we're... I mean, it was in Brazil already. We should be... If you don't like it, blame the Brazilians. Notice pizzerias offering customers honey infused with chilies as a topping. I could get into that. I mean, you couldn't.
I couldn't.
You certainly couldn't.
I like it when they stick other stuff in Marmite.
Oh, I had that recently with peanut butter.
Oh, I haven't had that one.
It's all right for like one jar and then you think this can't be the
You just want the original.
Going into the future. Anyway, you've been warned. It's already happening. So look, let's talk about the Premier League. It's Premier League Sunday here on 5 Live. We've got live commentary of Brighton versus Forest at 2 o'clock, followed by last season's top two, Manchester City versus Arsenal at 4:30. We're going to bring you all the build up from the Etihad. Neda Manua, Julian Laurent, Ellen White, the team with Steve Crossman this afternoon, and we'll have a chat with Alistair Bruce Ball actually after 9 o'clock. He's going to be commentating on the game for us.
But first, let's look at yesterday's results. Man United and Crystal Palace drew 0-0. United dominated the game, but they could have lost if it wasn't for a stunning double save from Andre Onana. Here's his boss, Erik ten Hag, who thinks the keeper is one of the best in the world.
He's in a brilliant form. We have now 3 clean sheets, and definitely he takes part in this because he had some great save. You mentioned already the penalty save, but that double save on that first that shot from Nketiah, I thought, and then in the rebound from Sarr, that is great. That is world class.
World class. Did he say they eaten the opposition alive or something like that? And it was a 0-0.
quite a thing to say.
Fair play. I mean, Erik ten Hag is a manager who will defend his players despite, you know,
the evidence,
absolute battering, and he'll still come out to defend them. But it was 0-0. Elsewhere, West Ham's poor start to the season continued. They are not doing as they would have wished, but they've brought in a lot of new players, as have Chelsea, of course, and they were beaten 3-0 by Chelsea. Liverpool, very solid, actually, after the last week's loss to Forest, thrashing Bournemouth 3-0. Let's get the thoughts of football journalist Alison Bender, and I sort of feel compelled to say friend of the programme, Alison, because number one, you are, and if I didn't say it, it would sort of feel like you've dropped off from that status.
Exactly. Although, Chris, I am disappointed in you because I think you missed an opportunity for a fantastic segue there from hot honey. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go on. Oh, for you. Right, okay, got it. All right.
Hot honey. I don't know if we can get that.
That's the sort of thing that you can get you into trouble. So I'm glad you said it rather than me, okay?
Absolutely. I have tried it, by the way, though, and it is delicious.
You're giving it a
say.
Go. Right, okay, all right. This is all a bit new to me, but fine, fair enough. Now, City Arsenal. I've been saying this, look, we've been the big build up and we, you know, it's all great excitement and 4:30 is going to be good, the commentary on 5 Live, etc. But I mean, the likelihood of a thriller, I would have thought, is relatively low, Alison.
Correct. Well, only because this happened last year and I remember getting really involved in the hype. I did so many videos, I did so much content, and then obviously it ended up being a 0-0 draw. And, you know, I think it's really interesting that this is, you know, one of those between two title contenders so early on in the season. It's a bit of a shame. And in fact, I think Pep Guardiola has said, you know, I'm not that interested in table position because it's so early. But of course, we know that the billing is huge. 2 points Arsenal away from Manchester City. And I think because of the fact that Arteta was accused of being a little bit defensive last time, they're going to really go for it. And why shouldn't they? I was at the North London Derby and it was fantastic to see how Arsenal were able to conduct themselves without key players like Declan Rice. Obviously, he's going to be back now.
Do you think they will go for it? I mean, look, you can see what Inter Milan, how they dealt with Manchester City in the week with that low block. And surely Mikel Arteta will have looked at that and thought, okay, yeah. And particularly with no Odegaard, you know, we were talking to an Arsenal fan earlier on who was bemoaning the kind of attacking spark they normally have in his absence. I mean, surely those two factors mean that actually they'll just be, they'll be going for a draw, won't they?
I mean, I can absolutely see what you're saying, and I agree with you to a certain extent, but this is the point that Arsenal really have to, if Arsenal want to win the league, they have to go there with attacking intent. I'm not necessarily certain that they will. The other thing I suppose worth pointing out, they both, as you said, have midweek European games, 0-0, both of them. Actually, Manchester City do struggle sometimes after midweek games, but I mean, they're relatively fresh. It's the beginning of the season, although we keep hearing, don't we, from all these players about how exhausted they are and obviously the new format of the Champions League and all these extra competitions we're trying to shoehorn into our season. I would like to see a bit more attacking threat. And then you've got, you know, you've got key players in both sides that can really make things happen. I mean, Saka has assisted in every single game this season. Obviously, Haaland scored 9, a couple of hat-tricks, a brace and 1 goal. I mean, there's so many great footballers on both sides. Mm-hmm. I would like to see Arsenal go a bit more front foot, but as you say, at the Etihad, I'm not sure whether they will.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if Haaland can sort of finally get the better of Gabriel and Saliba as well, because he's they've kind of had him for the last 3 games, haven't they, that they played last season. So we shall see on that. Liverpool, quick comment on them, because they were impressive yesterday, as they were in midweek against AC Milan in the Champions League, I thought. But Bournemouth rather playing into their hands too.
Yeah, absolutely. Top of the table at the moment. Arne Slot has slotted right in where Klopp left off. I mean, we always thought that team might struggle. When a huge manager leaves, I mean, we saw Manchester United collapse when Sir Alex Ferguson left, but obviously they were in a much different position. I think Slot's come in and perhaps made things a little bit more controlled, but, you know, it was 3 goals in 11 minutes, absolutely fantastic from Liverpool. I mean, Bournemouth probably made it easy, but I think Liverpool are definitely ones to watch, definite title contenders from what we've seen so far. It's great to see that a manager can come in and, you know, hit the ground running the way that Slot has.
Yeah, some goal from Nunez as well, wasn't it? And actually the emotion for scoring as well.
Well, he's found it difficult. He's been a little bit inconsistent, hasn't he? I would like to think that this is the season where he finally finds his feet.
Yeah, we shall see. West Ham against Chelsea. We had the commentary on 5 Live yesterday and it was a solid result for Chelsea and relatively straightforward for them in the end. I mean, both teams, as I was saying, they've got so many new players in. Chelsea really getting it together yesterday. But West Ham, you know, they brought in the new manager because they wanted more attacking, more coherent football, didn't they, than they were getting under David Moyes. But it looks like they're going the other way here.
Yeah, you're quite right. They haven't been doing it. But I did see a tweet, an X, I don't know what you say now, from Guillaume Balague. And I thought it was really good because there's a lot of Lopetegui out going around at the moment. And he said, listen, you've got to remember, this manager needs time. But you don't just manage Spain. You don't just manage Real Madrid. You don't just win the Europa League. You know, you have to be a decent manager. We've got to be a bit patient. We've got to give him some time. I agree. They don't look, they gifted Chelsea the goals, which I'm delighted about as a Chelsea fan. I think Chelsea look like they're really getting it together. I'm a massive fan of Enzo Maresca. I love the fact that he's having to deal with so many off-the-pitch problems, batting it all away, being very open as well, speaking to the journalists about exactly what he sees this Chelsea side. And they seem to be buying into it as well. The work off the ball is so good as well as the work on it. But yeah, I do think if you're a West Ham fan, you're probably feeling frustrated about the style of football. But I'd say be patient.
All righty. Lovely stuff. Nice talking to you, Alison.
Great to speak to you as always. Take care.
Take care of yourself, football journalist Alison Bender. So, yeah, midday. Steve's going to be here, Steve Crossman. Then we've got commentary of Brighton versus Nottingham Forest at 2 o'clock, John Murray and Matt Upson. And then 4:30, Manchester City versus Arsenal, Alistair Bruce Ball and Clinton Morrison. And don't forget, 6:30, Robbie and Chris taking your calls on 6:06. Quite a lot of listeners saying...
I was about to point this out.
The hot honey hashtag might have been tempting people to slightly different parts of the internet.
It might not have been that they were looking for content about bees.
Maybe.
It seems.
Who knows?
That's what our listeners think.
It's impossible to say. and Rob in Wiltshire, he's absolutely bang on. A lot of honey is junk.
Mm.
You need to be careful what you buy. Always check the ingredients on the jar and use a wooden spoon to serve it. Use a wooden spoon to serve it?
Now, why, Rob? Because one of my kids has a honey drizzler.
You get the thing. Really, yeah, I know those.
I've never quite known. And that's wooden.
Why can't you use metal? What's wrong with a knife?
I don't know. I mean, I use a squirty bottle, which I'm guessing means I'm not buying the right honey.
Well, he's right, because a lot of them are just loads of sugar, basically, substituting for the real stuff.
He had a lot of food fraud in honey as well. Interests me. Sorry,
but
my wake up to money hat on. Honey is one of the food fraud issues. So food fraud, where you get sort of something in a product that shouldn't be there, a cheaper ingredient. They're claiming it's one thing. The most famous food fraud ever, of course, is the horse meat scandal. But you know, you get smaller scale food fraud happening all over the world, and lots of honeys that claim to be from one particular area or one particular honey specialty, and actually they're just lots of different cheaper honeys all shoved in together. So it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm. That's good. This is why it's always lovely to have you here, you see.
but yeah, now, Rob, in Wiltshire, I would like to know why it has to be a wooden spoon.
I would like to know that as well.
Let us know. Get back in touch.
What am I thinking of?
I wish that everyone could see what Chris is doing with his hand. He's sort of shaking it in front of his head like it'll come to him.
I've had a blank. I've had a mad blank.
I don't know. What is it?
The solid block thing for honey.
The honeycomb.
The honeycomb.
Yes.
I've had a mad block. My wife had a jar recently where you have the honeycomb in the jar, which it's gradually sort of filters away as you're using it.
Mm.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So you get the honey as it sort of... leaks away, creating the honey that you're eating.
I'm really trying to get into
this. That's very genuine, isn't it?
It is. I'm trying to be really into this story, but I'm just a little bit of me wincing.
Because of course you hate it.
I do.
Okay.
Right, let's talk boxing. Daniel Dubois sensationally dismantled Anthony Joshua in 5 rounds at Wembley Stadium last night, as we might have mentioned on the show so far. The 27-year-old dropped Joshua multiple times to retain the IBF heavyweight title and leave Joshua's career in doubt.
Daniel Dubois reaches and lands the right hand once again, and he dips the knees of Anthony Joshua. AJ holding his chin up like a weather vane. Oh, counter right uppercut. The left hook buckles the knees of Anthony Joshua, and he's down for the second time. Referee Marcus McDonald allows the action to continue. And Joshua gets back up to his feet, but he's punched down to the canvas. So the bell sounds to begin round number 4. And Daniel Dubois lands a left hook which deposits Anthony Joshua on the canvas for the 3rd time in the contest. Anthony Joshua back into the breach, and he's in desperate trouble as Dubois barrels him over to the canvas once again. Anthony Joshua moving as though he is wading through wet concrete. His feet appear leaden, his hands appear painfully slow. More clumping blows landing on the gloves and forearms of Anthony Joshua. And Anthony Joshua in the midst of a nightmare here at the National Stadium. And then a right hand from Anthony Joshua causes Daniel Dubois to back up. And another right hand, and another right hand from Joshua. And a huge right uppercut. But during the course of an exchange, a blistering right hand has deposited Anthony Joshua on the canvas. The towel has come in, and this contest is over.
Yeah, and that was Liam Gallagher performing on the night. So I don't know if that gives you an idea of what the Oasis reunion gigs are going to be like. Here's Steve Bunce. He caught up with Joshua after the fight.
another day, but a tough day, tough night.
Nah.
How was the first round?
The first round?
Yeah.
Overhand right, chin in the air, no defence, kaboom. And it was a bit of a downhill slope from there. Tried to change the tide.
Yeah.
But it just went my night tonight, Steve.
When you walk out for the fifth, suddenly you look sharper, your hands are higher, you look truly focused going into the fifth.
Yeah, and then I caught him with a good shot, I think, and then I tried to go for it, and then I got caught with overhand right when I was throwing the uppercut. Thing is, I wasn't setting shots up. In a shootout like that, you really got to be a bit more sniper-esque. But when you've been hit a few times, it's survival. I'm in survival mode. I just want to get him out of there, and we had a shootout, and he hit me.
You hit him as well, but he hit you the final
shot. Exactly, exactly.
You're not finished, are you?
No. I'm glad he is. You know, we had a bad night at the office. Listen, if people want to see me fight, I'll fight. I'll fight, that's it.
Yeah. How else to say, I mean, not sniper-esque enough. I mean, it helps not being knocked to the floor five times. Doesn't it?
I just made the point. It was Saye again.
Well, yeah.
You know.
But we're not professing to be heavyweight boxers, are we?
Not get hit to the floor five times.
Yeah, that was your mistake, mate. That was the mistake.
We went wrong, Anthony.
More reaction a little bit later on in the programme to the big fight last night. Right, it's 8.34. Sorry, we're a bit late to the news. Here we go.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
So let's get your headlines. Sir Keir Starmer says it's his job to do something about leaks from his government. A number of Whitehall sources told the BBC earlier this week that his top adviser, Sue Gray, was paid more than him amid signs of disquiet in his top ranks. The Prime Minister was speaking ahead of Labour's first party conference in government in 15 years.
Israel says more than 100 rockets have been fired by Hezbollah into the north of the country this morning. Last night, restrictions were imposed on civilian movements in northern Israel in anticipation of a response to 4 days of attacks on Hezbollah targets in southern Lebanon.
Police have launched an investigation after graffiti saying jail Starmer was daubed on the office of the window of the office of the Labour MP Clive Efford in southeast London. Officers say inquiries are ongoing after they received an allegation of criminal damage.
And Donald Trump has ruled out taking part in another televised debate with Kamala Harris ahead of the US presidential election in November. The Democratic candidate said yesterday that she had accepted an invitation from CNN for a second head-to-head debate. But speaking at a campaign rally in North Carolina, Mr. Trump said that while the first contest had been entertaining, there would not be a repeat.
It was entertaining. Like it had such cut through that my kids are still occasionally saying, they're eating the dogs.
Oh, yeah. That's cut through,
didn't it?
Thank you for the text we're getting on Honey. Wake Up to Honey, new segment on BBC Five Hive. Says this has gone the real extra mile for that.
That's good.
Thank you.
Sean, if we had prizes, that would deserve
it. It would. Sean in Cardiff, maybe we should start it. Sean in Cardiff, I was in Miami earlier this year, ordered a pepperoni pizza delivery, asked if I wanted a hot honey drizzle. Was a bit dubious, but turned out to be a stunning addition, she says.
Stunning addition to the Drizzle family.
Definitely see how it's gone viral, and I'm now a convert to it.
Yeah.
It's a spicy honey, folks. This is what we're talking about. It's honey with chili. Go on.
Jenny in Peterborough says it's not just honey. She says chili has wormed its way into marmalade as well. A certain posh department store now sells a Lucifer marmalade, which is infused with the dreaded chili. I don't know, Jenny, I'm not on Team Hot Honey. I could be on Team Hot Marmalade.
The thing about things is you don't have to have them.
They can be available. You have to be on a team.
Felicity, you are right. Only buy good quality honey from a reputable producer. I think the metal spoon in honey issue is a myth, says this listener. Chris is talking about chunk honey, a piece of honeycomb surrounded by clear honey. Delicious,
well,
they say.
Not to pit our listeners against each other, but Linda from Sevenoaks says using a metal utensil kills the good enzymes in the honey. Fact for the day.
Who knows? Urban myth or not? I will continue to use a knife. let's get the sport. Here's James.
Well, one place to start really isn't there. Daniel Dubois beating Anthony Joshua in front of 96,000 fans at Wembley Stadium. It is the biggest win of his career. Dubois, 24 fights in, and it was just his second world title fight appearance. Joshua's dream then of becoming a three-time champion ended in the most dramatic and unexpected fashion. A big KO in round 5. Here is the new champ, followed by the old one.
I've only got a few things to say, man. You know, are you not entertained?
If I'm honest, it's a bit of a mix. I had a sharp opponent, a fast opponent, and secondly, a lot of mistakes from my end. But that's the game.
Well, there you go. It's a fourth loss now in 32 fights for AJ. We've got more reaction on the Five Live Boxing Pod with Bunsey, both fighters, all the pundits, and it was a brilliant night of commentary as well. Right, to the football, a Luis Diaz brace and a trademark Darwin Nunes banger. That's all he scores, seemingly, has moved Liverpool to the top of the Premier League table for now. Despite the attacking prowess, manager Arne Slot praised his defence after their 3-0 home win over Bournemouth.
We have a lot of attacking threat. We know we have this quality, but on the other hand, what I like just as much is us keeping 5 clean sheets out of 6 games. So that is, both of them are important to go through a difficult season like the Premier League and the Champions League.
So they're on top of the table on goal difference at the moment then, ahead of Manchester City, who have played only one game fewer. Of course, that game fewer is because City host Arsenal at 4:30 on Five Live. A big one, really, for September time. And before that, you can hear Brighton versus Nottingham Forest at 2. Chelsea yesterday, they backed up their recent signs of improvement under Enzo Maresca with a brilliant 3-0 win at West Ham in the early kickoff. Nicholas Jackson scored 2 and assisted the other. Maresca expects that his side still can get better.
Has been a good game, a good result. Also, the clean sheet has been important. But as I said many times, we have many things to improve. We can attack better, we can defend better, but overall we are in the right direction.
Manchester United Palace finished goalless. Erik ten Hag reckoned that his team ate Crystal Palace alive yesterday, though, despite that 0-0 draw. Tottenham, Aston Villa and Fulham all also picked up wins yesterday. Rangers and Aberdeen are through to the semis of the Scottish League Cup. Australia have taken a 2-0 lead in the 5-match ODI series against England with a 68-run victory at Headingley yesterday. England's standing captain Harry Brook was left once again to answer questions about their batting failures. Was it because Australia's players are a bit fresher at the moment?
No, I think they're obviously a very good side, a lot of experience. We've got a few fresh guys in there as well. We just haven't played the cricket we would like to. We've done everything we said we were going to do, so yeah, it's just not gone our way so far. And like I said, they're a very good side.
More reaction on the TMS podcast as well. Matteo Manassero carded a brilliant 9-under-63 to storm into the lead after the third round of the PGA Championship at Wentworth. The Italian will start the final round on 18-under-par. That is a nice, healthy three-shot cushion ahead of Billy Horschel and Rory McIlroy. McIlroy shot a 66 yesterday.
I played well. Another solid day. My lowest score of the week, no bogeys. But, you know, just trying to keep up with Matteo as well. So I know I'm going to need another low one to try to catch him.
Highlights available on the BBC Sport website and also on BBC Two television later on. A really nice surprise that yesterday evening when I saw that when I switched the TV on. In Rugby Union's Premiership, Leicester Tigers snatched a late win at Exeter, 17-14 it finished. Saris were 35-26 winners at Gloucester. Dragons have won the first Welsh derby of the new URC campaign with a 23-21 win over Ospreys. In Rugby League, Catalan already knew that they weren't going to be playing in the knockout phase of the postseason, but they did end their season with a 24-4 win at Hull, who avoided finishing bottom of the table on points difference because of that result. And in the Laver Cup tennis in Berlin, Team World are 8-4 up on Europe. Fascinating contest that. All the world's very top tennis stars going at each other hammer and tong. Each match win on day one is worth 1 point. On day two yesterday, they were worth 2 points. And today, if you win a match, it's worth 3 points. The first team to win 13 points will win.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Keith on X says, Fliss, honey from a squirted plastic bottle is not real honey. It's sugar and yuck only. Keith, as long as you don't tell my kids, you can think what you want about it. I don't think that they mind. I'll tell you what, let's get the weather with Simon King.
Good morning. It's been a pretty active few days with some pretty intense downpours and thunderstorms causing some issues. And today across England and Wales, you may be woken up this morning from some thunderstorms, particularly around some central areas of England. As we go through today across England and Wales, we're going to see some showery rain continuing on and off, and some of the showers could be heavy and thundery once again, mainly across Wales, the Midlands, Eastern and through southern areas of England. Later on today, there may well be some brighter skies developing across East Anglia and the southeast, with temperatures generally getting to about 17 to 20 Celsius. Across northern England, it's looking a little bit drier. There will be some thundery showers moving their way into parts of Merseyside, Greater Manchester, southern areas really later on this afternoon, but staying pretty cloudy in eastern parts of northeast England and across eastern and central Scotland, staying fairly cloudy today as well. But there'll be some sunshine towards northern and western Scotland, some sunny spells also developing across Northern Ireland today, and maximum temperatures 17 to 19 degrees, but around about 13 or 14 degrees right on those North Sea coasts. Simon King, Five Live Weather.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live,
the voice of the UK.
Sunday Breakfast. Listen on BBC Sounds.
Good morning, it's Sunday Breakfast with Chris Warburton and Fliss Hannah. Loads still to come. We're with you up until 10 o'clock. But now let's return to the continuing, the escalating violence in the Middle East. The Iranian-backed group Hezbollah says it's launched rockets at an Israeli military complex in an initial response to the targeting of communication devices, pagers and walkie-talkies in Lebanon last week. 39 people were killed. Thousands of others were wounded when those devices exploded. Let's talk to Sally Abu Aljoud, who's a journalist based in Beirut with the English language news service Lorient Today. Sally, morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. I mean, we've been covering the rising tension between the countries. Can you explain, though, what it feels like, in Lebanon this morning?
Overnight, there's been a significant escalation in the cross-border fire between Hezbollah and Israel. Since the early hours of Sunday morning, Hezbollah has carried out hours-long sustained assault on targets in northern Israel, central Israel, for the first time since October 8th, since Hezbollah opened up the Lebanese front in solidarity with Gaza. For the first time, Hezbollah fired rockets at Haifa in Israel, claiming responsibility for two strikes, one on Ramat David Air Base, and which is located southeast of Haifa. Now, this comes after, also a heavy day on Saturday, where from all day, morning to evening, and almost without interruption, Israel was targeting southern Lebanon. Many villages were targeted for the first time. It marked the most intense day since October 8th. So the tensions are really high. Everyone is scared of a wider war at the moment.
Now, Hezbollah, of course, a political force and a military force. How are they viewed by men and women on the street in Lebanon? Are they unwelcome? Are they part of the society? Is there support for what they're doing?
Hezbollah in Lebanon has a very wide support, especially since October 8th. There's two groups, though, in Lebanon at the moment. One that supports what Hezbollah is doing, especially after, what Israel is doing in Gaza. They see that as an effective move to open up a Lebanese front and support Gaza. But you also have another group in Lebanon that does not want war and disagrees with how the group is taking, decisions like that on behalf of the entire country.
Sally, thank you very much for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sally Abu Aljoud there, journalist based in Beirut. And we'll be speaking to an expert at Bar-Ilan University in Israel later on in the show. It is 8:47.
BBC Radio 5 Live, the home of Formula One.
Oscar Piastri wins the Azerbaijan Grand Prix. He takes his second Formula One win in the last five races.
Exciting times in F1.
This afternoon from 1.
Marina Bay Street Circuit.
Singapore.
Can Red Bull turn around their fortunes on a track that they haven't got good history at? Or are McLaren in a league of their own now?
Listen to live coverage of every lap
on 5 Sports Extra and BBC Sounds.
It's a busy day on 5 Live and 5 Sports Extra. It really is. The big match we will look ahead to. Alistair Bruce Ball joining us a little later on. And we'll talk politics with a couple couple of Labour activists who are at the party conference after 9 o'clock as well. Don't forget, Colin Murray's going to be joining you from 10 o'clock as well. So we'll check in with Colin. We just go seamlessly from breakfast into Colin and then into all the build-up for the Premier League from midday as well. It's going to be Steve Crossman with you for that later on 5 Live. Just some news to bring you that's just coming into us here is that there has been a mass shooting involving several assailants, which has left at least 4 people dead and dozens wounded. This is in the US state of Alabama, according to police. They say, we believe that multiple shooters fired multiple shots on a group of people. This was in the Five Points South District of Birmingham, just after 11 o'clock. Birmingham, Alabama. 2 men and 1 woman were pronounced dead at the scene, and a 4th victim died in hospital. According to the Gun Violence Archive, this year there have been at least 403 mass shootings, defined as a shooting involving at least 4 victims dead or wounded across the US. So that's the news we've just got coming in, that at least 4 people have died and dozens wounded in this this mass shooting event in the US state of Alabama. Let's talk about music now on 5 Live. Just to let you know, by the way, it's Sunday Breakfast on 5 Live, and it's Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton. In just 8 months, Chapel Roan. Have you heard of her? She's massive. She's gone from being a relative unknown to one of the biggest new pop stars on the planet. But as she finished a sold-out UK tour, the 26-year-old said she's struggling with invasive fans. Let's have a listen to her music. Here we go. Yeah, so she's huge. In August, she posted 2 TikToks, now collectively viewed over 30 million times, calling out what she called the creepy behaviour she's experienced and telling fans to respect her boundaries. Mega fans, it's not a new thing, but is it changing the relationship between some of these big stars and their fan base? And is it getting problematic? I think Chapel Roan has talked about potentially quitting the music industry if it doesn't change. We can speak to Sarah Dightem, who's a Times journalist, author of Toxic, a book exploring female superstardom over recent decades. Sarah, morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. There's quite a lot to this, isn't it? It's quite a sort of complicated picture in some ways. But just tell us about what's going on with Chapel Roan, first of all, because I think it was this week, wasn't it? She told Face magazine that she might quit the industry if harassment towards her doesn't subside.
Yeah, and she's also talked about this in a Rolling Stone interview where she went into a bit more detail about some of the harassment that she's received, which is really very disturbing stuff. So she's had a stalker who's turned up at both her parents' home and her hotel. She's had fans meeting her at the airport and demanding autographs to the point of having to have security intervene. She's had people grabbing her in bars when she's out. And all of these are things which, you know, if she wasn't famous, you would not even question that these are criminal behaviours and enormously intrusive behaviours. But because there's that element of fame, for some people, there's this presumption that they know her, they have access to her, that they're, you know, entitled to touch her and make demands of her. And this is the thing that she's sort of put her foot down about and said she's not willing to tolerate, and has had an incredibly supportive response, particularly from other women in the industry. So Sabrina Carpenter, Billie Eilish, Charlie XCX, they've all come out and sort of confirmed what she's saying and said, like, they absolutely support her effort to put some kinds of boundaries around this sort of fan behaviour.
Yeah. Well, how do you do that? Well, how do you do the boundaries? And also, how different is it to anything we've, you know, seen for years and what used to happen in the past between fans and these big acts?
Yeah, there has always been this issue of, you know, people who cross the line from fan to stalker. Some listeners might remember in the 1990s, there was a major trial involving Madonna, who was of a man who was arrested for stalking her, invading her property and saying he was going to cut her throat if she didn't marry him. So it's not that these individuals who cross the line are a new thing. But what is new is the role that social media plays mm-hmm. in this and the pervasiveness that that creates for the objects of this fan attention. And I think Chapel Roan's a really interesting one because she had quite a up and down path towards fame. So she was signed at 17. Then 2 years ago, her label actually dropped her. And she rebuilt her own profile through social media. So yeah. A big part of her success is founded on the fact that she has built these really strong individual relationships, well, or what feel like individual relationships with her fans.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. This is the same sort of thing with Taylor Swift, isn't it? Because she's built, and we'll use her as an example, such a strong relationship with her fans as a result of being so personal with them in a way. And a lot of that is through the lyrical content of her songs as well. She is giving fans her innermost thoughts and experiences in a way that, you know, amazing songs and what have you, Madonna, Michael Jackson, these other huge stars, they didn't necessarily do that. You know, they were talking about things that were perhaps close to them, but they weren't necessarily their most inner thoughts, were they? Which is what a lot of these stars at the moment, it's all about.
Yeah, there's a real intimacy to, I mean, in Chapel Roan's case, she sings a lot about her sexuality, about coming out. These are personal experiences that she has been kind of going through via her own music that inevitably other people respond really powerfully to. And there's always going to be a contingent who can't tell the difference between having a strong reaction to a celebrity and their music and actually knowing and being close to that celebrity. And that's where things become quite scary.
It becomes tricky, isn't it? And my daughter was telling me the other day about Taylor Swift going to a wedding upstate New York somewhere. I think it was her producer's wedding or something or other. She was telling me all about it. And a load of Taylor Swift fans went up there and it created a load of issues between the fan base because a bunch of fans said, well, you shouldn't have been going there. Just let her get on with her life. And my daughter was saying, they're not real Swifties and this kind of stuff. But look, the final one, because presumably the problem they will always face is that on one hand, as you're saying with Chapel Roan and the way that she developed her career, is, you know, these artists, they caught fame, they caught attention, they get hugely wealthy in the process, but then criticise the parts of fame, the more negative sides, that they don't like once they've achieved it.
I mean, I don't see a problem with that. I think there are parts of fame that are absolutely intolerable. And, you know, if you or I had to, you know, go about our daily life at risk of being, you know, grabbed and kissed by people we don't know, I don't think any amount of money would make up for going through that. I think the problem is that built into the structure of fame is this kind of unwanted intimacy and this element that is very hard to control. And celebrities at the moment are trying to come to terms with that and are trying to establish relationships where they can have that closeness, which is really valuable and really important to them as well as to their fans, but without it going too far. And we haven't yet seen what that's going to look like.
Or if we'll ever get there. But yeah, okay. Sarah, thank you. Thanks very much indeed for that. Sarah Dightem, Times journalist, author of Toxic. It's a book exploring female superstardom over recent decades. It's 8:56.
Noticeable to me that when we play music, I dance along and Chris just sits unmoving in his chair. Anyway, last night, 15 celebrity dancers took to the floor in the first live show of the Strictly Come Dancing 2024 season. Amy Dowden said she was so happy I could burst after her first live Strictly Come Dancing performance since being treated for breast cancer. The professional and her celebrity partner, singer JB Gill, topped the judges' leaderboard after being awarded 31 points for their waltz to When I Need You by singer Leo Sayer. Let's talk to Debbie Chapman, a dance teacher from Cardiff and a big Strictly fan. Debbie, morning.
Good morning.
Morning after the night before. And what did you make of the show?
Well, I really enjoyed it, and I thought there were some really good dancers. There's a lot of good dancers on this one, but I think I was mostly impressed by how the partners had got together, and there was a great ambience between a lot of them. So I think this is going to be an interesting one to watch.
What do you look for as a fan? Like, do you want genuinely good dancers, or do you want the good stories and the journey and the progress?
I think you want good dancers. You want the journey, you want the progress. But last night, I mean, I'm a trained dancer, and last night, for me, Paul Merson, I don't know why, but he just made me laugh. And so someone like him that is going to find this journey a bit difficult, I was really almost rooting for him to, and I will be looking at him. So I think people really look for different things, but it's an entertainment program. So I think you've got to tick all the boxes. And I think it did last night. Really, one of the best openings I'd seen.
Now you're in Cardiff. Will you be rooting for your fellow Welsh, well, it's Welshman, yeah. Welsh person, Wyn?
Yes, definitely. I know Wyn, and already I could see last night, he's such a nice man. And he'd obviously taken everyone under his wing. And he's got a big personality. I think he'll do well. I think he'll go quite far because he tries hard. He throws himself into everything, 100%. So I think he will do well.
I mean, it had the glitz, it had the glitter, didn't it? It had the excitement, it had the comedy moments. Do you think the show can regain the shine that it's maybe lost in recent weeks with this new series?
Well, coming up to this, I didn't know how Strictly was going to be able to survive, actually. But last night, I think whatever they've done a really good job. And I think people will start to forget it and move on. Because to me, last night, that didn't look any contestant uncomfortable at all.
Good to know. Debbie, we're almost out of time. But in 10 seconds, you're doing a big dance event yourself for charity today. Tell me what that is.
Yeah. We're dancing for Southport after that terrible incident during the summer holidays. All our dancers are getting together.
So many dance troops. Well, that felt like they felt that so strongly. Debbie Chapman, yeah. Dance teacher from Cardiff. Thank you very much for being with us.
The voice of the UK
and the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And good morning. If you're just joining us, it's 9 o'clock on this Sunday morning. It's Felicity Hannah and Chris Warburton in the headlines now. The Labour Party conference, its first in government for 15 years, is getting underway in Liverpool today. The lead up to the event has been dominated by a number of leaks from inside government. Sir Keir Starmer says they damage everybody and it's his job to do something about them. Our political correspondent Alex Forsyth says Sir Keir is hoping to put a difficult few days behind him.
Because of the week that the party's had, this week when we've had all of that drip, drip constantly of stories about, you know, the gifts of clothing, the gifts of spectacles, the tickets for the football matches, the pay of Sue Gray. I think that has just set quite a difficult tone going into this conference. And there's like a consciousness that they need to find a way to deal with that so that they can get on with talking about what it is that they want to, which is what Labour plans to do in government.
Some breaking news to bring you. Police in Alabama say at least 4 people have been killed and dozens of others have been injured in a mass shooting which took place in the Five Points South District of Birmingham, Alabama. Just after 11 p.m. local time, officers remain on the scene. We will bring you more details on that story as we get them.
The Israeli military says Hezbollah has fired dozens of rockets into Israel in what the Iranian-backed group has described as an initial response to the simultaneous explosion of communication devices in Lebanon last week. There have been reports of Hezbollah rockets landing much further into Israel than before, close to the port city of Haifa.
The Crown Prosecution Service says it twice considered bringing charges against the former Harrods owner Mohammed Al-Fayed, but on both occasions it concluded there was no realistic prospect of a conviction. Dozens of women have come forward with allegations of being sexually assaulted or raped by the billionaire who died last year.
And Donald Trump has ruled out taking part in another televised debate with Kamala Harris, the Democratic candidate in November's presidential election, said yesterday that she had accepted an invitation from CNN to hold a second head-to-head debate on the 23rd of October. But speaking at a campaign rally in the battleground state of North Carolina, Mr. Trump had this to say.
The problem with another debate is that it's just too late. Voting has already started. She's had her chance.